Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is the Transformation of Value podcast. This show is brought to you by Swarbricks, the first law firm in New Zealand to accept Bitcoin for legal services. The team at Swarbricks are Bitcoiners, and they are knowledgeable about the legal aspects of Bitcoin in New Zealand in areas such as estate planning, property, and trusts. Swarbricks offers a 20% discount for services paid in Bitcoin. Find out more at swarbricks.co.nz/Bitcoin. Now, in today's episode, I talk with Kieran Nolan and Chris Pollard, two Bitcoiners based in Melbourne, Australia. Kieran Nolan is a Bitcoin educator. He is the technology specialist at a primary school in Australia teaching Bitcoin, including getting Andreas Antonopoulos to do a video lesson with his students. Kieran is also part of the School of Bitcoin.com, Blockchain Academy International, and a bunch of other exciting projects. Chris Pollard joins us a little bit later on in the episode and is active in helping organize the Bitcoin meetups in Melbourne. He also runs bitcoinonly.store, as well as leading a new project to create a permanent Bitcoin space called unspent.space. With both of my guests, I was blown away with the range of impactful projects they are working on. I do hope you enjoy the episode. If you want to get in touch with me, please send an email to hello@thetransformationofvalue.com and I will get back to you. Otherwise, on to the show.
You're hitting me with Roger Ver stories, and I've been thinking because they have this like Wednesday Bitcoin Cash meetup in Tokyo, and I was like, man, I wonder if I could just go meet him and try and change his mind, you know?
He was actually a really nice guy. Like, I know he gets a lot of flack online, but like, he was buying everyone beers and stuff, and yeah, explained Bitcoin and the block size really clearly and sort of concisely, and it sounded reasonable. Like, I didn't think much of it. I was like, oh, cool, that'll be like a BIP, like a Bitcoin improvement proposal, and maybe that'll go through and whatevs. Didn't think much of it, and then came back to Australia and it was just like the whole blockchain space sort of jumping off, like talking about it, and it was like these block wars and then all these forks after that. It was just crazy. So weird to have met him like a few weeks before and heard it from like him explaining it to me, and then here we go, it's all sort of happening. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I got to know some of the Tokyo Bitcoiners, and I've had them on the show a couple of times. A really knowledgeable, really tight-knit group, very privacy orientated, like that deep into graphene, into, you know, all of that stuff, because I don't know, there's just something about the state apparatus in Japan, it's very claustrophobic. And I think New Zealand, Australia, we're used to having just a little bit of perceived freedom.
The Japanese
They don't mess around, man, like the authorities, and so everyone's kind of a bit cagey, which is fine. Like, I can learn a lot, which is possibly why they're going to have that Nostra conference there in November that you said.
Should be fun. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I reckon there's going to be, I'm going to try and do a presentation on the School of Bitcoin. So one of my friends has sort of put me up for that. So that'll be cool, because we want to introduce Nostra as the ID piece for the School of Bitcoin, which would be pretty cool. And in fact, one of the original devs that we had in the community sort of reached out to me this week with a really cool tweet on like this concept of integrating AI with Nostra.
Oh, Nostra,
for the DAES, so the Decentralized Autonomous Education System, and using that as a front end. And the really cool piece about it, and I'll learn more on Friday when we actually meet up over Zoom, because we do like weekly meetups online, so like faculty meetings, but it's all sort of public. So if you want to hear me talk for hours, you're more than welcome to. It's like the last year of me talking about Bitcoin. If that tickles your fancy, it's interesting.
So Kieran, you're a teacher, right?
Yeah, so I teach higher ed, and I'm my official title for primary school. So I'm half my week sort of split. So from Wednesday to Friday, I teach higher ed. Monday, Tuesday, I'm at primary school. My official title is STEM Wizard.
Wow, that's just a little bit on that, because I was checking out your website and I saw you had Andreas Antonopoulos do a little mini video call with like one of your classes or something.
Yeah, we did a few with him actually. So yeah. There's a lot of history to that. So back in 2013, 2014, when I started at the Runner Park Primary School in Melbourne, We reached out to two universities, one in Greece and one in the UK. Like, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know, like, Andreas had anything to do with it. I was just like, oh, these guys are accepting tuition fees in BTC. I wonder if they'd send out some BTC to buy some Raspberry Pis for the kids at my school. And yeah, they did. So they sent out like $60 worth. And just to demonstrate that, you know, from the other side of the world, you can buy computers for school kids in Australia, sort of thing. And of course, the Department of Ed didn't like it and didn't understand what it was. And our bursar kind of cracked the shits and was like, oh, I don't know what this is. How do I put this on the books? Rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, really? Like, we can't buy computers for school kids because you don't have financial literacy? Like, this is crazy. And that sort of went on until, yeah, we ended up getting a 21 Bitcoin donation from a philanthropist in the States. But during that time, like sort of building this, we built a learning space with that, out of shipping containers or blocks in a blockchain sort of thing. Yeah, reached out to Andreas and kind of found out that it was him that sort of sent the BTC through. But he's really passionate about education, obviously, and he did a bunch of interviews with us. So student focus. So basically the kids putting together questions and then him sort of answering them. And he's so articulate and can really break down like complex ideas and make them palatable for anybody. So I think he should be a primary school teacher, really. Like, yeah. He makes it so fun and like interesting. So yeah, it was really good. So we did two or three, and one wasn't recorded, second one was, and the third one, like, I stuffed up and didn't get the recording, so I've got like the audio. I was like, no, it was the worst. So yeah, then, yeah, haven't really heard from him since, so I need to probably reach out again because I'm at a different school now, so I'm actually building a podcasting space as well.
Yeah,
so I want to start doing that sort of thing.
Well, just a little note on that. One experience that was quite transformative for me in intermediate school, so like year 7 and 8, so I don't know, was that like 11, 12, 13 years old?
Mm-hmm.
We had like a small TV studio in the school, and that kind of role of technology in the school was really being pushed at the intermediate that I was at, and yep. It really made a difference. Like, I'm thankful, looking back, that I had the opportunity and some really passionate teachers who were pushing for getting the best gear.
Yep.
You know, people like yourself, you know, and I take my hat off to you for doing that, because these kids are thirsty to learn, and if you can provide, you know, equipment, whether it's computers or other tech,
yep.
And a kind of an environment where they can learn about that and how to use it, that's extremely valuable.
100%. Like I was saying last night at the meetup, like we were kind of going, we did a session on like running a full node and the importance of it, why you do it, what it looks like, all the rest of it. And part of that, I was saying like every school in Australia and New Zealand should be running a node. It's next to free. It's the learning that comes out of it is just crazy. You can use any piece of hardware. So you can like get old computers, bring them back to life, use them as a note. Like there's no reason not to, right? Like, but I think the big thing is like people sort of conflate that with mining or something negative. So we need to really push through that and go, no, this is a good thing that we should be doing at every school. And it's something that should be really embedded in the curriculum at this point, I think, because it's a lot of fun and the kids get a lot out of it. And the learning that comes with that is just like invaluable, really.
Well, it's also situating kids for a changing landscape. You know, the world isn't going to be static, or it's never been static, and it will continue to evolve. And mm-hmm. I look back at the skills and the opportunities I was lucky to have in school, and it was just, you know, public schooling. But, you know, I remember they had a whole bunch of old computers and they were chucking them out, and I managed to just grab them all. You know, they're, I don't know, depreciated and, you know, not on the books anymore. And they said, you know, just take them. And yep. That was very
Linux them up.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And had them running. And these were old, you know, Pentium 3 type things back in the day. But it was really fun to play with that, get stuff running on it, get up a local network going in my house. And that sort of experience, looking back, is exactly what it took to learn how to run my own business, or to, you know, be a creative and do what I do. And everything else is kind of, you can learn it on the job, you know?
Yes, yes, 100%. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that. I was talking about that with the year twos today, and we're actually building, we went through a whole bunch of stuff, building a game in using Game Boy development kit, which is really cool. So you can actually run it on the original Game Boy, which is like, it's sick. So we're using AI to actually develop the story and then building it all out. But before we went into that, we were sort of talking about like my previous school and doing exactly what you just said, upcycling old computers using Linux. So like we've got a philosophy of being platform agnostic in my classroom. So obviously you want to be exposed to all types of technology. Like we don't want to go down one route. Like you see schools that just get a bunch of iPads and then, you know, the kids touch the screen like when they go to a computer sort of thing. It's not good. But if you've got access to sort of everything, you can learn and choose like what you like to learn with sort of thing. But one of the big things is learning about Linux. So we're actually setting up a Linux lab at my school as well. So getting the kids to choose like what Linux distros they want and that sort of thing. But upcycling old stuff and not throwing it out, like why throw it out if you can use Linux to you know, bring it back to life? And that's, I think that's really cool. Hey, Crispy.
Got Chris joining us now. Thank you. Welcome.
Hey, Cody.
Yeah. We've just been chatting a little bit about Kieran's story, educating, working with kids, teaching Bitcoin and, you know, STEM topics. But I appreciate you, Chris, making the time. I know you had your own commitments tonight, but welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Yeah,
most of my commitments are usually herding a couple of little cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No worries. We were just sort of, as I said, in the middle of talking about this this idea of, you know, teaching kids and how young people can learn about Bitcoin, which is a theme that I've explored with a couple of other people on the show before, because there's this real, I think, honest naivety that they have, and they approach things in a very real way, and almost the financialization of the economy and all of these buzzwords that we use, they kind of, we do the mental gymnastics to make it work as adults, but for kids they're like, man, I just want the money in the piggy bank, where is it, you know, give me the gold coins, give me the bitcoins, and they seem to grok it a lot better. And so Australia and New Zealand situating kids to be ready for a world that's perhaps extremely different to what we see today, whether it's AI, Bitcoin, changes in technology. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
I completely agree. And I admire what Kieran's been doing. There's not many around in Australia. Well, not that I know of.
STEM wizards, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what you are, Kieran? STEM wizard.
A STEM wizard, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
It's literally my official title. It was so funny because when I started at school, I kind of started at the same time this job with the higher ed job that I'm doing. So I'm working for Blockchain Academy, kind of painting that orange as well. But that's like higher ed and working with primary school kids at the same time. So it's like half my week sort of flips and I'm like, all right, now I'm working with adults, but it's kind of cool. But when I started at the school, I said, I got a really cool principal. In fact, today she just signed off on me getting like two massive TVs, like touchscreens for the front of my classroom. So I'm like, hell yeah, it's awesome. But when I started, I was like, can I have a fun title? I don't want just like a regular title. Can I be a STEM wizard? She's like, I love it. Yes, put it on your email. So that's literally on the bottom of my emails when I email out. So fun. Kids love it as well. It's great.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That passion for learning is critical. And I don't know, there's this apathy in the world that something about Bitcoin and the hope that it brings, some of these visions of a better way are very attractive. And I think they can bring out the best in people. Like, you know, there is a better way to do things. And I think for kids, you know, you had the lockdowns, you had the COVID era, and it was very disruptive to their learning and to, you know, the building of the self that you go through in that period of adolescence. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, there's also a changing world order. It must be very confusing, you know, on top of everything else that goes on with, you know, with young people. So, you know, having the opportunity to learn about this tech, to have a play with it and to work with people who are friendly and passionate about that as well is, I think, really cool.
I think for me, it like I actually studied primary teaching and never got into it. But I, yeah, as I said, I sort of admire you, Kieran, because it sort of intimidates me thinking about trying to teach young kids about Bitcoin, because, you know, anytime I sort of get into a discussion about it with someone who's not a Bitcoiner, you know, I just start babbling and get into all sorts of like abstract, you know, terminology. And I find it very difficult to bring it back to first principles that people might connect with.
Here's one for that, right? So yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And I mean, I've been sort of doing this for years and had like the negative people, negative parents, negative teachers. I remember when we got the donation initially, it was like a staff meeting and my principal was so excited to like just tell like the staff. That was the initial one where we got like $60 from overseas in Bitcoin to buy some Raspberry Pis. He was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, let's tell everybody. And the negative reaction, like the visceral negative reaction we got from, so I was like, whoa, like, why do you hate this so much? Like, they couldn't articulate it, but they've obviously seen something negative in the press. So, well, this is bad. Like, it's a negative thing. But obviously they're wrong, right? So we can't suffer fools. Like, we need to sort of keep moving forward and doing the right thing. But I will say, talking to it's that shifted since then, like massively. So we're talking sort of 2013, 2014 to now, it's like a different world. So everyone knows about it. Some people still think it's bad for the environment or something, but aside from that, like you can flip that and kind of explain how it's the solution, not the problem. Like in particular, like we have a guy who was at the meetup last night who's got a space in Drabana actually using solar energy to basically harness BTC and become carbon sort of negative, which is really, really cool. And like making a profit off that as well as sort of helping the environment. So it's just like win-win. But I will say, like, explaining BTC in terms of it's not necessarily like it's not a get rich quick scheme. It's not an investment. Don't invest in it. In fact, earn it or mine it. But the big thing is explaining to people that it's not for you. It's not for us. It's for the majority of the world who hasn't been allowed to have a bank account. So most people don't understand that, right? So you're explaining that to kids, you're like, no, there's people in the world, you know, your mom and dad have a bank account and then go and buy stuff for you. Most of the people in the world in other countries, they're not allowed to do that. So the banks stop them from being able to provide for their families. So we've set this up for them. That clicks, right? So it's not about like the money, or don't invest in it. I say like actively tell them not to do that. And I think that sort of resonates with people, because the other people in the world or in our country that aren't allowed to have a bank account are kids as well, right? So like they're now, it allows them, if they want to, go and start your own lemonade stand or whatever it is. You don't need permission because it's permissionless. You can spin it up and away you go.
Yeah. Well, along on those lines, I was talking to a guy here who organizes some of the meetups, and, you know, talking about how you can also work it into just the way you bring up your kids in terms of incentives and that kind of time preference, you know, coming back to Austrian economics. But, you know, you can say to your kids, hey, well, look, if you, you know, you mow the lawns, I'll send you some sats. And that's kind of in lieu of pocket money. So it's actually good because it means they're not just walking around with cash. They're able to sit on the sats, and they maybe can't really spend it anywhere. So they end up sitting on it and they maybe go through a cycle. And it's like, well, those 5,000 satoshis they got for mowing the lawns and taking out the rubbish have actually resulted in something quite substantial.
Yeah.
And that's formative, you know, for a young person, I think.
For sure.
Chris, I'm keen to talk a little bit about your story. So I understand you helped organize some of the Melbourne meetups, and you also run the Bitcoin only store. Tell me a little bit about what you're working on and what your projects are.
So in my day job, I changed career a couple of years ago. I used to be a project manager in the education space, so sort of university admin stuff. And don't get me started on universities. Made a change. I was sort of, well, I'd started working with with the IT team a fair bit and just having conversations with them, not being able to, you know, go sort of beyond an initial discussion and get technical, sort of being jealous of that. So finally made the change and did a boot camp and got to the level of, you know, being able to enter the job market and started as a junior software developer. So been doing that for about a bit over a year and a half now. So work on, so I guess JavaScript, React, Node.js kind of stuff. In the meantime, also just been, continuing down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and getting Node set up and doing all that sort of stuff. But I guess I hadn't really met anyone in real life until early last year, and it was just I came onto the Melbourne Bitcoin Only Telegram chat from a meetup page. It was quite an obscure sort of link that was there. I think that's probably how a lot of people still find it. It's still quite obscure. And just since then sort of started getting into it, and that was just after lockdowns. So I think Melbourne was a bit scarred, and it's actually probably created quite a few toxic maxis, you might say, because of the communist regime in Melbourne.
Bad Andrews.
Yeah. So, and I know, you've had your
had our troubles here as well.
You've had your troubles there too. Yeah. But Melbourne was quite extreme. And so everyone was a bit burnt out, I think. And so from there, we sort of just started to, I think there were some meetups during lockdowns, like in parks and stuff, places where you didn't need ID and, you know, show your vaccination certificate or whatever. But once that started to fade away, people just started to meet up and everyone sort of just, because there was no leader, no organizer, it's pretty decentralized. People just started sort of encouraging each other to meet up anywhere. You know, we meet up in a market, in a park, in a bar, wherever. I think, you know, I met Kieran, I think on Twitter. He was, I might have been following him and his colleague, and she was coming down to Melbourne, and I think we just said, let's meet up. And so things
was awesome.
Yeah, things just started happening like that. So it was sort of just an organic sort of resurface, I guess, of the in real life, going from cyberspace to meet space last year. And so this year, I think, is just more of a consolidation and sort of having things a bit more regular so that people can rely on them, maintaining the meetup page. So that keeps me pretty busy, just like maintaining that and sort of trying to, encourage people, make sure people are welcome when they come in. I'm not sort of the only organizer or anything. I'm probably one of the more active ones, but, you know, anyone can chip in or get permission to update the meetup page or whatever. It's fairly organic at the moment. And then recently we've just been a couple of us have just been working on more of a permanent idea. So I guess the idea is called Unspent Space. We've sort of documented our journey on a GitHub organization. Basically, it's the journey to a permanent space in Melbourne. And along the way, we sort of thought, well, actually, the idea is probably just, it's beyond just Melbourne. Melbourne is kind of just a project. And why don't we just open this up and people can learn from what we're doing, our mistakes. And also, you know, if we make a repository for, scheduling or allocating spaces within the space once we have it, then why can't everyone use it? So, trying to just make a bit more of a community out of it and leverage other people's experiences as well.
I want to pull on that string a little bit more because I think we can bring this back to Kieran. But just quickly as well, bitcoinonly.store, that's one of your projects as well?
Yeah, that's just a little hobby project. Yeah, it's just – it really came out of me wanting to get a BTC Pay server up and running.
Yeah,
it's really shirts, hoodies, sweaters, men's, women's, some children's. It's just using a basic, well, maybe not basic, but it's a particular design that's reasonably simple and sort of repeated across the apparel. So I'm not doing, there's a lot of sort of Bitcoin stores out there, particularly, in the US, and there's lots that do, millions and millions of designs, and I'm not really a designer. So
they look pretty good to me.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, after experimenting a bit, I'd sort of decided to just double down on a simple design and just keep it simple. And, rather than trying to pump out, the next new sort of design, just keep it simple.
Well, pulling that thread and giving back to Kieran, I think there was something you said with the unspent space that really, I'm seeing this emergence also here in Wellington and New Zealand more broadly, that commercial real estate has really been gutted, and the move towards work from home, and we also live on a fault line here, so we've got heaps of earthquake risk buildings, but that are still fine, but they're not 100%. Things like that have meant that it's actually very possible now to get spaces and to kind of create these sort of mini citadels. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on that idea of creating Bitcoin spaces, Bitcoin meetups, more permanent footprints for things, Kieran.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go back in time, sort of back to 2013, like we had, I would say, like the world's best Bitcoin center in Melbourne, right? So the MBTC, it was awesome. It had awesome meetups, people coming in, working on projects, great space in South Bank. And it didn't get the support it sort of deserved, I thought. Like, so it was getting funded. I think the narrative was it was getting funded with money from a mine in China with free energy. So it sounded pretty cool. Anyway, I'm like, that's awesome. But that being said, that obviously didn't last forever. And yeah, didn't get the support. Like, they had like politicians and stuff coming through, and obviously politicians aren't going to do anything to support that sort of space. But even the community, I don't think, gave it enough love. I mean, obviously I did, and we were like, I was the Google Apps admin for them for a while, like for free, and like, just trying to help out. But I think there's obviously like a downturn in the markets as well. Like, so when after the halving, six months after, as it does, like massive downturn. And I think a lot of people sort of shifted, and then it kind of morphed into the blockchain center, and then sort of wasn't quite the same again. And it was really sad because it was like, I was in that space. I went to the space in New York as well. So they had like the first Bitcoin center on Wall Street in New York, and I actually went to speak there, which was awesome. Like, while we were over there, I just sort of reached out and said, can I come and speak about my school? So I had all these people there, like, that had to just listen to me talk about my primary school in Australia. But it was cool. Like, got some great feedback and super nice people. And then that was shut down, like, I think a month or two after I was there. So I was like, man, that was like really sad, because there's a doco on it as well, like how like the Wall Street guys kind of moved in to kill it, essentially, which was really sad. So I think, like, having seen those spaces and see how important it is, obviously we've got the Oshi Gallery now, which I kind of dismissed as like an NFT space. Like, admittedly, I was just like, oh, that's for NFT stuff, but it's actually named after Satoshi. Like, it took me a while to click about that. I was like, oh my God, like, you guys have built an amazing space here. But I think the Bitcoiners aren't really going there. It's more like the NFT crowd and Ethereum people. So I think we need to flood that space with Bitcoiners. So there, like, I mean, there is cool spaces happening, and obviously, like, with my schools, so building like the world's first Bitcoin school out of shipping containers, like we got a 21 BTC donation that the kids actually voted on the allocation for that. So we built this cutting edge space out of shipping containers for that. So having that as a hub for kids, not just in my school, like, because I basically ran a program after school called Coda Dojo, actually on the weekends as well. So people outside the community could come. So we had people coming from as far as Ballarat to come to that, which was crazy. But yeah, having that physical space, like you're saying, Crispy, the meat space is really important, I think. Oh, thank you. My dinner's here.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, having the meat space is really important because I think you can do this sort of stuff online, but it's real different when you get sort of face-to-face, particularly in an education setting. Last night we had the meetup here in Mornington. It's like a ex-school that's turned community center. It's actually pretty cool. Great space to actually set up. So we did everything from running full nodes to what the future of mining looks like with solar and like everything sort of in between. It was fantastic. I don't think you get that same experience online. So having a physical space is really important. The really cool thing that's come out of that, actually last night and today, I approached my principal to see if we could run an event, a Bitcoin event at my school for parents. And she's like, hell yeah. So we're going to do a physical, like in my classroom, we'll set it up. So yes, I think we need more physical spaces. And I think that's 100% the way. I think the more the merrier, right? Like, I don't think there's need for competition. I think we need, like, you know, competing against like different spaces. Like, let's just have as many as possible.
Yeah, there's something really powerful about that. And I've certainly noticed, I think, generated from the meetups that started in New Zealand, you know, properly, I think, maybe last year, there was a few sort of informal ones, but the BitKiwi meetups in particular, very well produced. And the connections that happen there, it's got this very emergent kind of effect where, you know, networks get built, you meet people. And I mean, this podcast and many other projects have sort of spawned out from that that place. And I think that's just, you know, once every two or three months. But imagine having a place you can go to every day.
Every day.
And you see that with places like Bitcoin Park and some of these other initiatives, which kind of in a way, I feel like, I don't know what it's like in Melbourne, but a lot of the co-working space, kind of shared office space type thing, really felt like it got co-opted by sort of fiat hustle startup culture and not necessarily a good way. I think you can find gems still kind of very focused and productive spaces. But I think of something like WeWork or, you know, some of these more generic places. And I think, man, there's nothing about that appeals to the ideas and the innovation that comes out of Bitcoin. It's almost like the opposite of innovation. It's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly right. Like I think the MBTC initially was that, right? So all these cool, sometimes wacky ideas, but it's all awesome, right? Like you kind of don't get that in a like a WeWork. Like I've worked in a WeWork space before. They're cool, like they look cool, but yeah, it's a bit,
shit doesn't get done.
It's a bit soulless, I think is the word. Like you kind of just have there's no sort of heart to it. It's just like, how do we make as much fiat as possible for whatever startup we're doing? And it's not as altruistic either. Like I think the word altruism doesn't get thrown around enough in the Bitcoin space, but it's a very altruistic group. I think like there are a lot of people looking out for each other and looking out towards the future of how we build something better. And I don't think we get enough credit for that as a community.
Yeah. Just one little note. We have a space up in Auckland called the Altruist School of Bitcoin. It's just a tiny little Bitcoin educational space in the middle of the CBD. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, Chris, I'll just come back to the unspent space. So I guess, yeah, I mean, Melbourne-based, but looking at the GitHub page here, you really are looking at this sort of worldwide open source kind of approach where, you know, anyone can kind of fork the repo and kind of start their own space. I mean, have you had any other interest from people overseas? Like how far have you gotten along on this journey?
Yeah, so up until probably last week, we hadn't really publicized it at all. I mean, I started a Twitter account and a Nostr account, and, you know, I've been making a few little posts here and there. and started a little podcast just to kind of document the journey and interview other places. So we opened up. We actually opened up a Discord server. I think maybe yesterday or a few days ago. Just welcoming different, mainly Melbourne people in, but we've had a couple of people from Toronto. There's a group there who I think they've been talking for a while about doing this sort of stuff. So it's kind of an emerging thing, as in, like, I hope that it can just be defined and redefined in that it doesn't have to be prescriptive. You could fork a repository if you like, or you could just maybe end up
fork the idea. Yeah, just take
or
it.
You could fork the idea, or you could, or you know, it might be. Personally, my view at the moment is that it could be a network that actually supports, you know, places that kind of get involved in the community. So you don't have to call yourself an Unspin Space, but you could be part of the Unspin Space network. And, you know, you might make a podcast episode and we'll chuck that on the Unspace podcast, or, you know, you might make a PR to a particular repository and, you know, improve the booking or the survey, you know, maker repository. So yeah, it's not prescriptive. It's kind of a discovery, I guess. And it was sort of like, well, we're doing this Melbourne thing, but like, what the heck? Why don't we just open it up, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of opening it up, both you guys based in Melbourne, though I know it is quite a broad area. You've got places like the Mornington Peninsula and, you know, rural Victoria, different parts of the state and of the country as well. Overall, how would you characterize, I guess, at an Australian level, what the Bitcoin scene is like, but also just in Victoria and Melbourne, what the scene is like, you know, where it's at the moment, kind of your general vibe on that?
Maybe I'll go first, Kieran.
Yeah,
go and then it. You go. Yeah. So starting with Victoria, I would say, as I said before, like, I think after lockdowns, we revealed a number of toxic maximalists. So I think there's like quite a number of like very hardcore committed Bitcoiners. But apart from that, I think it's a bit more polarized than other states as well. Kieran's probably got like an opinion on that because he, you know, he lives it and breathes it in his work as well. But if you look at the other states, you've got, so Sydney, they've got quite a big Telegram channel, probably double the size of Melbourne's. And they've got one person in there who's been a committed organizer for quite a few years, you know, so monthly event with a speaker on a particular topic at, I think, similar venue. They've been doing that for years. So that's like, you know, very consistent. And then Queensland, I think Brisbane, also similar, maybe not to the same degree, but still quite organized. And then Perth has quite an active Telegram channel now, and they do meetups, but I think it's you know, maybe a bit more ad hoc. But I guess, yeah, you'd probably have to get maybe some of the guys from there to speak on it. I hope I'm not framing it in the wrong way or anything. I think Adelaide's quite small, and Darwin or Northern Territory, I haven't really heard much out of. But have you heard of the Bush Bashers,
Cody? I have heard. They have been mentioned to me, but tell me more.
So the Bush Bashers they're a big thing. For a lot of Bitcoiners in Australia. So it started during the lockdown, during the lockdowns, I guess. A couple of guys in I think Brisbane and New South Wales, I think, wanted to meet up, and they decided on a location in the country. I think Murrurundi or Murrurundi, small town, and I think they posted it up somewhere. Might have been Twitter or somewhere. and a bunch of people just showed up one weekend, and from then on they sort of had this thing called the Bush Bash, and it's basically in three states at the moment. So the Queensland one is about to happen in Cairns in end of July, and the Melbourne one happened in Beechworth, and it actually happened in Beechworth because it was strategic based on the lockdowns, so that the anyone who needed to escape, if there was like a lockdown, could escape reasonably easily and quickly from Victoria. So Beechworth was decided as a practical location.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. So Beechworth, that was in March. I went to the one last year and this year, and that was a real game changer for me. It was just really nice, like what both of you guys have talked about being in person with people, but you know, you're just with a bunch of people who, like, just average people, you know, just like from all walks of life, who have this fundamental understanding of this this technology. Everyone coming from a different angle, but everyone has this shared understanding, and from that you can have these great conversations that you don't have to deal with that you know, the preliminary conversations that you might normally have. So for a lot of people, it feels like a life changing thing. I mean, dare I say, it kind of feels religious. But yeah, it's just a really, it's just a beautiful gathering. That's all I can say.
You're finding your tribe, you know, and how would you characterize it? Is it like, I mean, Bush Bash to me brings up images of tents and vans.
Well, that's, yeah. I avoided it the first time I heard it.
I was the same. I was like, nah, I'm not camping.
Well, I didn't think it was camping. I thought it was like a doof-doof, you know, some club event.
Yeah.
But no, it's basically the one in Beechworth is I think someone donated the expense of like the RSL hall. Do you have RSL? Is that the same?
Yeah.
Same terminology. In New Zealand?
RSA, same thing. Though.
Return Soldiers
Association,
Association League, yep. Yeah. So just a, you know, just an old hall, and, you know, someone brings in a little coffee machine from home, and, you know, there was a projector, and basically they kind of worked out the schedule on the day, who wanted to talk. You know, it was quite like an old school gathering, you know, just... almost like an unconference sort of thing.
Yeah. It's civics, man. It's participating in the democracy in the structure of the country, which is something we just haven't done for a long time. But keen to hear your thoughts, Kieran, just on sort of what we're talking about here with the overall scene in Australia, Victoria, the Bush Bashes.
I haven't been to the Bush Bashes at all, so I haven't, can't really speak to that. Again, I seriously thought it was camping, so I was just like, nah, I'll give that a miss. But it sounds awesome, so maybe I'll go to the next one. That would have been really cool, actually, like, particularly in the lockdown periods. Like, for anyone who doesn't live in Melbourne listening to this, like, it was hell. Like, locked in your house for 3 years, like, it's bananas. With this guy telling you on TV that you're no good and not essential. Like, it's just, it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous. So to go to a space where... you know, you could freely go and speak to people. That would have been really nice during that time. So, yeah, hats off to those guys for setting that up. That's really cool. But I will say, in particularly the peninsula here, like, it's just gone, like, the amount of people interested and in getting involved and businesses coming on board. Like, for years, like, going back to on-chain days, I've been trying to get businesses on, like, involved to accept BTC. And it's been like pulling teeth. Like, they just don't want a bar of it. And when you do actually get them on board, the accountants for their companies shut it down and say, nah, it's too hard for me. I literally had, like, around the corner from here, like, when we moved to Mornington, there's a place that does like pay it forward, which is really cool. So it's like, you go in, you get your coffee, you buy like another coffee or something else, and they've got like people in need, so like homeless people and stuff will come and you've bought that for them, sort of thing. So I was like, oh, that's fantastic. Like, have you guys got a web presence? They're like, kind of, but not really. I'm like, oh, I could help with that. And we could probably get some donations like from people online through Bitcoin Network. And sort of set that up. Everybody excited, right? So the owner excited, like all the other people on the board excited, and the other staff excited, like, yes, let's do it. I'm like, look how easy it is. Like, we can set it up. Obviously, Wallet of Satoshi, shout out, like, makes it so easy. Green just works, right? That's settlement. Like, it's such a nice onboarding experience. But guess who killed it? The accountant. So I went to the accountant and they're like, nope, we can't do that. I don't like it because I don't understand it. Robot think. And it's just like so sad. Like, I've seen that story again and again and again and again. And it's like literally like, you know, homeless people not getting food because one guy is financially illiterate who should be literate, like the one person that should be. So it's really frustrating having seen that over and over again throughout the years. But I think we're coming to a stage, I've kind of had an epiphany recently, like all these businesses, I don't think we need to wait for permission anymore. I think they're just going to do it, right? We're just going to leapfrog all that nonsense. Once they get an understanding that it's a transaction, so it's not, this isn't an investment, I'm not telling you to invest in anything. This is a means of payment that you can use then for another business. So like akin to a barter system, right? I accept BTC over Lightning for this coffee, and then I can go and spend that at another shop. And I think that's happening here. Slowly but surely, and I think we're going to get a lot of traction with that, which is really exciting, really nice to see. And I think that with that, there's a lot of education sort of coming into it as well. So like the space that we've, or the community that we've sort of set up has been expanding, and everyone's hungry for the education piece around that as well. So yeah, super, super positive. And it's refreshing from going through years of people not wanting a bar of it to now we've got come to a point where there's a lot of people excited. And we've got like places like the Fox Hotel. So Fox Hotel, which when's the next one?
I was about to mention that. Yeah.
We've got it coming up soon.
A couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah. So the owner's actually back from, she was over in Europe, so she'll be back for that. So we'll be able to organize a big one for that, which will be awesome. But yeah, that just came about through, I've been sort of doing my teaching cert for higher ed, with kind of a group of people doing from different walks of life, doing a similar sort of thing. And it turned out one day went into class and everyone had COVID, including the teacher. So it was just me and Clodagh, like one other student. And we're kind of like, oh, what are we going to do? Just hang out for the day. So it happened to be like the culinary arts people were doing like their final assessments. They came in and were like, do you guys want to do fine dining this morning? We're like, yep, well, we got nothing else on. So kind of went into this room and it was just us at this big table. And she was kind of talking about like what she does and Rara and owns this business. I'm like, oh, you own the Fox Hotel. That's awesome. Can we do Bitcoin meetups? So I proceeded to give her a Bitcoin lesson like over breakfast and throughout the day. And then, yeah, we've actually onboarded her. They've set up Wallet of Satoshi. The accountant magically is on board, so giving them advice on sort of what to do, end of day, they sort of dispose of it, whatever. But that's awesome. So we've got like a really rocking space for Bitcoin meetups that's it's got Guinness, so it's win-win, right?
Yeah, the spaces like that and having a few venues really make a big difference. Like, we're a bit thin on the ground here in Wellington, but certainly Christchurch and Auckland, there is a few places where, you know, accept Bitcoin. And what we've found generally is that it's people who are Bitcoiners, it's kind of a bit easier than trying to make the sale and trying to push someone on it. You know, they'll get to it when the time is right for them. But if someone's already a Bitcoiner and they're open to the idea,
mm-hmm.
I know there's a Cambodian restaurant down in Christchurch that, you know, he gets it, you know, and he's not cashing that out, you know. He doesn't need the fiat, so he's on the Bitcoin standard, and that makes the whole accounting piece a lot easier, because it's when you're doing the capital gains and all of that, that's when it gets very, you know, it can get messy. There are ways around it, but if you're a Bitcoiner, it's fine. It's just a digital asset, and it makes it a lot simpler. So I think if it's a best spent sometimes just with people who are ready to understand Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and you're not trying to shimmy in this thing which they don't really understand, and they think of it as just another crypto, you know.
Yeah,
I think for the Fox Hotel, like, yeah, I don't think she's a Bitcoiner yet, but that's okay. Or maybe she is a Bitcoiner and she doesn't know it, but I think really I think the key there was the relationship. So it was mm-hmm. getting along with Kieran, making a connection, and because of that, able to kind of, consume that idea, and sort of, wanting to, to have people at the pub as well is good anyway. But yeah, I think it might be the case for that, you know, over time she realizes that, you know, she might want to just be keeping a percentage of that rather than, handing it all back to fiat.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Is it possible that Melbourne is the heart of Bitcoin in Australia? Can we say that here, or is it?
No.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't know. Kieran, would you say that?
Once upon a time, yeah. Oh, actually, yes. I would say yes. Man, we had the world's first Bitcoin school in Melbourne, in Dunedin, right? Like, it's a big deal. And I think that sort of gets overlooked. I think the amount of work that's gone in here sort of gets overlooked. And it's been like a long time with a lot of people really putting in a lot of effort in Melbourne. I know like there's other spaces, like I was up in Brisbane last week, and they've got a pretty cool event space there, and you know, we had blockchain week, so that was kind of turned into Bitcoin / Ethereum week, whatevs. But I think that's cool. But yeah, and I think there is a lot of cool stuff happening in Melbourne, and I think I feel like it's exciting again as well. So I can see it sort of jumping off and coming back to sort of what it was, like the exciting times of like 2014, and the spaces sort of opening up, particularly if we start opening up some new spaces as well.
Well, I guess from my perspective, I lived in Sydney for a little while, and I haven't actually spent that much time in Melbourne, but the experience with the lockdowns and kind of the rebound from that now, where it's like, I think there's an awareness, the kind of the sort of political side of it, and what that means, and what freedom means. These questions have been asked, and that situated with a very creative, cool place with the infrastructure to actually have, you know, a global audience. You know, it's a global city, really. I don't know, it just seems like it's situating itself as a place where things could happen, and you get the critical mass of builders, people making it happen. Maybe the lack of perhaps traditional finance, like you might see in Sydney and whatnot. Maybe that is enough that you've got the building blocks there for a world Bitcoin capital. And I often think, what is it? You know, what is it in New Zealand? I don't know if it's Auckland. I think it might be Christchurch, to be fair, and it's a much smaller city, but it's got the heart of Bitcoin, if you know what I mean. And that sounds a bit vague, but you can kind of feel it, the difference. And it's a fiat Bitcoin sort of dichotomy. And I don't know, it's just exciting to be part of that, right?
Yeah.
100%.
I think, I don't know, there's something a bit gritty about Melbourne, maybe compared to Sydney. And maybe that works in our favor in this regard, because Bitcoin is a bit gritty. You need to kind of get down and dirty to understand and do the work to understand it. Whether it's the heart, I'm not sure. I did jump to say no, just because I know a lot of Bitcoiners out there in other places that might feel possessive of that claim.
I didn't mean to put you into that.
No, that's all right. But Melbourne maybe is a little bit unique in that it has a big population that's been oppressed for a few years, and oppressed more than other states. And I think we were taught to be separate from each other. And maybe that's why there are a lot of people who were afraid to talk about their desire to break free from that, or to just, you know, to explore freedom and to explore other ideas. It was, I don't know about you, Kieran, but even amongst my friends, a lot of friends that I had who are not Bitcoiners, it was very difficult to talk about any, to make any critical observation of the government of the time.
Yep.
Because basically what it meant was, it just meant that you're like some far right, like, far right lunatic.
That irked me to no degree, because I don't consider myself right wing whatsoever. I think labels are stupid. Like, we shouldn't be using them at all. It's the silliest thing ever. It's the same as job titles, hence STEM wizard. But like, if I had to label myself, I'd probably say like left wing libertarian or something. Like the concept of like sort of building things to help other people. And the fact that, like, if you tried to criticize anything in that time and say, hang on, nothing's making any sense that's coming out of the television, which I don't watch anyway, somehow it's still getting fed to me. Like, how is this happening? Yeah, you were kind of looked at as like, oh, like, and I don't think everyone was sort of doing that. It was just like the fear that was pumped out, like, you could be targeted next. It was very sort of Soviet style propaganda that was really gross, and it would have been more palatable. I was saying the other day, if they had like somebody that wasn't so hideous to look at, like Dan Andrews, you know.
Well, we Dictator Dan, I mean, I was watching quite closely, and we had a similar though watered down version of it here in New Zealand, but certainly, I mean, guys, you know you did well to get through it, and the suppression of discussion and just the general malaise that you guys went through, not enviable, and you got through it, and now that the rebound and the rebuild happens, and that's exciting, because you know we're not going to let the wall get pulled over our eyes again. So
the other thing I was going to say, sorry, was just with regards to, I guess what's happening in Melbourne here, is just to mention the bit devs. So I don't know if you've heard, Cody, that the bit devs that happens in different places around the place. I think it started in maybe New York, and probably a lot of ones in the US. And essentially it's meant to be this like Socratic sort of seminar. Where you talk about, you know, basically what's happening in the ecosystem. We've got a young fella here, Nick Farrow, who is basically an open source developer, and he works on a protocol called Frost, which is kind of I guess you could think of it like a new kind of multi-sig. And he basically works full-time on that. And he started BitDevs last year, kind of pretty casually. And now, it's just a regular. So once a month we occupy the I think it's what's called the blockchain hub, the blockchain center at RMIT.
Yeah.
Just on a Thursday night.
That's cool. Yeah.
And people just like post on GitHub, you know, like on an issue thread, like during the month, if there's like some thing that they want to discuss or listen about or hear about or talk about, and people just go along
those lines. I had a catch up with a Kiwi developer who's working on the Bitcoin dev kit, BDK, and he's living in Taiwan, and they just had a bit dev there, and I wonder if there's some learnings around how unspent space could work, and the idea of just like it's just a concept that anyone can kind of pick up and run with. There's not necessarily a centralized structure, but the Socratic seminar was something he mentioned, and now I understand it's actually part of the way you run a bit dev, is you have this dialogue and discussion around the ecosystem, and that's really cool. It's like a reproducible concept that can be deployed anywhere. So that's really cool to learn.
Yeah, it is cool. Like bit devs is sort of it's like an open source franchise that's just propagated.
I love it.
Awesome.
Look, guys, I see some really common themes between both of you. Education, the importance of in-person meetups and those connections. A lot more that I think individually I could both talk to you about, and I hope maybe we can catch up again in the future, but I am conscious of time over where you are. So wrapping it up a little bit, maybe it'd be good to find out, well, firstly, what you'd like to share with the listeners, anything you'd like to send them to. And yeah, any other sort of final thoughts? So maybe starting with yourself, Kieran.
Yeah, sure thing. So a number of projects I'm working on. The School of Bitcoin's probably not my favorite, but the biggest one I think that's I'm quite passionate about. And it's basically building out a decentralized autonomous education system, value for value at the core. And we do sort of weekly meetups and lessons, and it's open for anyone who wants to come and do a V4V lesson. So I'm going to do a GitHub lesson, end-to-end, how to build out a website on GitHub this week. So, which is really cool, actually, because I've got the kids at my school rocking on Google Classroom as of today. So I'm going to post the video for them as well, so then they can sort of make their own websites as well using that. So it's going to be pretty awesome. Digital Playhouse as well. So I'm on the board for the charity, and that's actually the overarching organization that's over the School of Bitcoin, of which we've got a learner fund. So the learner fund with that is basically to fund any student projects that students or learners want to develop. So anything from, you know, a lemonade stand that accepts sats to whatever crazy Nosta project you want to build, you can put a submission in, and we can potentially fund that through the Digital Playhouse, which has been pretty cool. And then finally, I'm running something called the Cyber Academy. Cyber Academy and Blockchain Academy. So I work for Blockchain Academy, and they're awesome. And we're doing some really cool stuff with them and Bitcoin, and getting students actually thinking about disintermediation using the BTC blockchain, which is really cool. But the Cyber Academy, I'm running out of my school at a Borneo primary with real-time learning. And essentially what that is setting up classrooms like my own as nodes in a network. So like think a school within a school, and full node running Minecraft interconnected with other schools. So what we want to do is sort of train up grads who maybe have finished like cybersecurity or networking or something like that, with an interest in teaching or working with students, how to actually build out like a classroom like my own sort of thing. So much the same as what you're doing, Crispy, but like a classroom specific open source template, kind of like all the learning that I got from Marana and building out the school on the blockchain. But that sort of took me 8 years. I've kind of fast-tracked that and built out an awesome classroom within sort of 3 terms. And I've documented everything on GitHub. So the idea is that other schools can come along, do the same thing, have someone like myself in that space, and then we're connected between schools. So like, yeah, classrooms as nodes. So
wow.
Pretty exciting. So a lot of stuff. Anyway, I'll stop talking.
Yeah. Crispy, anything you want to send people to? Any other sort of final thoughts?
Well, thanks for having me. It's been really good to talk to you. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Maybe just unspent.space if anyone's interested in having a conversation about the final destination of a permanent Bitcoin space. We've just opened up a Discord, so come and have a chat.
I'll throw the links into the show notes. But
yeah.
All right, guys. Well, look, as I said, there was so much here. I think I'm going to have to catch up again and individually at some point and go over some of the stuff, because it really is powerful. And in particular, the education piece, I'm inspired by what you're talking about here, you know, especially with the kids getting onto this level of tech, this level of involvement, the future of schooling, decentralized schooling, classrooms as nodes. I mean, man, that's high level stuff, and I am impressed. And that, along with unspent space, utilizing Bitcoin networks meetups to build the community, there's a lot going on there. I appreciate both your time, and I hope we can keep in touch.
Thanks so much, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody.
And Crispy, see you later.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you for listening. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I am Cody Allingham, and that was The Transformation of Value. If you'd like to get in touch, please send me an email at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com, and I will get back to you.